Welcome to Michigan HockeyCast 4.3. Down goes Duluth, down goes Minnesota State. Sounds like a good weekend to me. Are you in need of a snowblower?
Not presently, no.
But you just moved to Canada and you live in Toronto.
Yeah, but I don't have a yard.
But you probably have like a sidewalk. Well, isn't that how it works? That like you all chip in and everybody brings their snowblower out and does like one square?
Okay, but this is a street that like several thousand people live on.
All right, so maybe you could like split the square with someone. Okay. All right. If you don't need a snowblower, do you need a tractor?
No, I do not have a farm.
I was not expecting that response. So I guess you don't need a big sort of lawnmower either.
No, not particularly.
So there's really no point in us watching all of those commercials that we watched all weekend?
Probably not. I thought it was interesting when they would do the local news breaks and stuff.
So you got to see what was going on at like the bake shops in Duluth?
Yeah.
So we had NCHC TV, which was just, I mean, that's just a streaming of like the local station, I think. It was like My9 had one of the games, or one of them was like some random NBC Channel 6, which that would be kind of interesting that like an NBC local affiliate would pick up a hockey. Like, can you imagine Michigan or Michigan State being on like ABC in Ann Arbor or in Detroit?
No, but it makes sense for Duluth because they don't really have, you know, this is their premier sport.
Well, sure. It was just, it's a very odd feeling,
and
right?
Like, Duluth is not close to like anything. So it's not really close to the Twin Cities. So yeah, there aren't really any other sports to cover at all. And you know, Duluth is extremely cold and you get tons of lake effect snow. So, you know,
so people need snowblowers.
Hockey is the thing there. And it's, you know, the Duluth team's been very successful. So it makes a lot of sense that a local channel would pick those up.
I mean, I was watching with Craig and sort of by the end of the second period, he's like, you know, maybe we do need a snowblower. And I was like, Craig, you barely have a driveway. And so we talked him out of it, but I wouldn't be surprised if like a tractor shows up one day and we have to like store it in a shed somewhere or something like that, just because, I don't know, they're pretty convincing commercials, I thought. So NCHC TV, we're going to have that again next weekend on Saturday, so I got to get used to saying it, NCHC TV versus BTN Plus, Alex, go.
Well, I mean, for one, the broadcast quality was a lot better, but that's because it was a professional broadcast being carried on a streaming service.
Was it, though?
Yes.
Like, I couldn't see any numbers.
Yeah, but you can't see that, like, in anything in college hockey. So there were not really many scenarios where, like, you were way away from the play. There weren't scenarios where like the volume level on the broadcasters got way out of whack and you couldn't hear them, or
that's true. That's very true.
Or all of the various
and
issues.
State. Right?
Yeah, the streaming was never like the stream was not down, like all that sort of stuff.
That's true. There, I mean, the camera was a bit roller coastery though. Like there was like swaying back and forth. Like the puck would come out to the point and they'd like shift over and then it would be shot. So they'd like throw on the brakes and throw it back.
Yeah, I mean,
at the
net. It
gets
a little herky jerky, but that's like the case in most hockey broadcasts that are not done by like state of the art people. It's not a really easy sport to do camera on. What you just want is the camera not to be, you know, pointing at the rafters for 15 seconds. Or
like when there's a goal and you hear all this cheering and you see some banner up in the corner, like what happened? So the thing that I started to think about in this is that like when you play in smaller arenas, and I don't know how big Duluth Arena is. I'm guessing it's probably slightly bigger than Yost to some extent. But when you play in like minor league arenas, the cameras are also probably closer. So like they're probably to the ice. I mean, like, so you probably have to like turn it more because you're so close that like you're automatically zoomed in. If you're so far back, like in an NHL arena, like up a few levels, like the amount of turning of a camera is probably more minimal.
Amsoil Arena holds 1,000 more people than Yost does.
Right. So a smaller, like, you know, Yost is like 6,000 to 7,000. So they host probably 7,000 to 8,000 or whatever. But I'm talking about like, if you go to Little Caesars, like that's not going to be a problem, right?
Yeah.
Like, cause your cameras are so far back that you don't have to like, you're not always automatically zoomed in because of how close you are. So maybe that's just an issue that isn't really a BTN thing. It's not really an NCHC TV or My9 issue. It's just like a smaller arena issue for at least hockey. Maybe basketball probably doesn't move as fast, so you don't get that as much.
Amsoil Arena can hold up to 9,000 for concerts, and their Wikipedia page has a whole list of all of the artists who have played in Duluth, Minnesota. It's quite a list.
I wonder if Yost has its own Wikipedia page. I've never really thought about that.
Yost has its own Wikipedia page. Yes. Okay, but Yost doesn't hold concerts, so
maybe it should.
Well, they have Chrysler for that, so
yeah. But like, sort of like the garage bands will go play at Yost.
Yeah, Prince played at Chrysler in like the early 80s.
Oh yeah, well yeah, because there used to be like the 70s and or 60s and 70s. There was a lot of like. Ann Arbor would host a lot of stuff like that, right? And yeah. So there'd be people, you know, that's more of like a townie discussion. Maybe we should have a townie podcast. Our buddy wants us to have a wine tasting podcast. Yeah, I don't know that that's going to go well.
That'll be in late December.
We're actually going to try to pull that off. No, we can't say that because he's going to be really excited if we say that. So maybe we should get to some hockey since this was a pretty great weekend. I'm trying to think back of like, what are the great weekends I've ever really experienced in Michigan hockey? And this has got to be up there in terms of win quality. I mean, this is two top five teams. Obviously, Michigan has won. It's gone to the Frozen Four, so they've won big games like that. But in the regular season, it's tough to beat two top five teams in 2 days.
I think this is the biggest since they, you know, went through the regional in 2018 and beat Northeastern and Boston U. Probably the biggest in the regular season since a few weeks before that, back in late February of 2018, when they beat number one Notre Dame at Yost. And that put them in good position to make the tourney. So it's been 3 or so years since you had a win of this magnitude.
Yeah, and we were a little concerned early on the Friday game as Michigan played Duluth, because you kind of wondered if Michigan was actually at the game for the first 10 minutes or so, 12 minutes or so. I mean, they didn't get a shot, I think, for like 8 or 9 minutes into the game. At one point, I think it was like 7 or 8 to 0.
I was a little, let's just say, curious about whoever was keeping track of the shots. That's just what I'll say.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you think Michigan had shots?
I think they had one or two at that juncture, and it was
zero. Probably wide, though.
You have to be careful whenever you're at an opposing arena. Like, this has been a problem with Vegas for years now. That whoever counts their shots way, way inflates the shot counts, which has thrown off advanced models for years regarding Vegas's analytics. But that's another story. Yeah. You can get some home cooking with the shot keeper is what I'm saying.
Our buddy Nate Wells says the same thing about Penn State when he goes there.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, there's no question.
Like, that someone dumps a puck in around the boards and the goalie goes back to retrieve it and the shot counter goes up one. And you're like, that wasn't near the net. But so Duluth pretty much – but they kind of earned this. I mean, yeah, okay, maybe Michigan didn't get credit for a shot or two or whatever. But, like, they also didn't really have the puck a whole lot. At least in the offensive zone, and Duluth kind of took it to them. But the one guy who did show up and we were not worried about was Eric Portillo, because he stood really strong early on. I have a number of notes written down about, ooh, big Portillo save. Phew, nice save, Portillo. And I bet he had 4 or 5 really, really not game-saving saves, but like big stops to kind of keep Michigan in the game early.
Yeah, he did his job. It definitely seemed like Michigan, you know, didn't get off the plane there for a little while. And you know, it's tough for me to say how many of those were A-plus saves because, again, you get those distance camera angles and you have to kind of squint to see what's going on. So there were definitely chances, though, and he made the saves to keep it 0-0 for a while.
Yeah. Duluth also got a power play like right away, it seemed like, and that's actually my first note, so I'm guessing it was very, very early on, and Truscott went to the box, and I have down here that like those were where Portillo made a couple of those saves, and that was probably maybe the scariest penalty kill that Michigan had, at least in this game, if not over the weekend, other than the time they gave up sort of the fluky goal in the second game, but and we'll get more to this, but Michigan's penalty kill was pretty good. This one was a little janky, and Duluth had a few good chances on it, didn't get a goal. Michigan survived it. Portillo drags them through. I've written down like a person had a bad DZTO, Power had one too, and then it just was kind of a slow period that eventually, or slow offensively for Michigan, that eventually resulted in a goal for Duluth as Portillo makes a save on the left side of the net. We were actually just talking about this in prep, but then the puck gets like reversed around the boards and is kind of dunked in on the other side. I don't think he had a chance to get across. He was under fire mostly during that sequence, and it's kind of 1-0, and you're just like, well, it's Duluth and they look awful, and I hope this doesn't go, like this trend continues for the rest of the game, because this could be bad.
I don't remember this goal at all. And there's no highlights of it on Twitter because Duluth doesn't tweet out any highlights and Michigan doesn't tweet out opposing goals. So I'll take your word for it, but it definitely was a bad first 15 minutes or so.
Yeah. And then Power takes a penalty, and there was much debate between, I think there's a couple of people on Twitter that you and I were interacting with, and we were interacting ourselves, where Power turns the puck over, but you said it looked like he
broke his stick. The penalty, I figured this out after, I think it was post-game quotes, don't remember exactly, but he was called for not immediately dropping the broken stick, which...
So like playing with a broken stick?
Apparently, if you break your stick, you know, it turns into a hot potato, and if you don't drop it within... 0.2 of a second, your hand will be, you know, scalding red, and the print of the stick will be seared onto it. Like,
throw it as high as you can.
Yeah, like the guy in Raiders of the Lost Ark with the medallion on his. So anyway, point is, if you have to get rid of it as fast as you can, and I guess they say he held on to it when he went down to block the shot. I don't know. He was behind the net. He was trying to pass it forward. His stick breaks on the pass, and as a result of the stick breaking, it's not the pass he intended. A guy has the puck. He goes down to block the shot and I guess didn't drop it fast enough. I don't know. I rewatched this several times, and pretty much the moment after he breaks the stick, he drops down to block the shot, and the referee's arm goes right up, just goes right up. And I was watching this before I knew exactly what the reasoning was. And I'm like, I don't see anything here. He breaks his stick and he goes down to block a shot. He didn't touch anybody. He didn't do anything. And immediately the arm goes up. So I don't really know.
And you can't take every reaction to be truth, but he also looked very frustrated with that call.
Well, and one story for the refereeing this weekend was that it seemed like a lot of 50-50 stuff went against Michigan, and about half to probably 2/3 of the penalties they took, the player who was hit with the penalty was screaming as he went to the box, like a toddler, you know, being restrained and carried away. So generally speaking, you can tell if a call is borderline if the player committing it is upset. And Michigan was upset a lot. So it just kind of feels like a lot of borderline stuff didn't quite go their way.
Right. And so with Power in the box, it's not a good sign. You're down 1-0. That's what he's one of your two or three guys that you have on the ice on defense almost all the time. And Duluth didn't really do anything. I have like there was one big chance on Portillo and he stopped it. And other than that, there was not a lot at all. And that was a really good sign for the rest of the weekend, because, you know, Michigan's going to be in these games where they don't get the whistles. And, you know, when the tournament comes, you know, sometimes you just get those referees that you don't want, and you're all of a sudden having to kill penalties, and Michigan's penalty kill has looked pretty good.
I don't have any complaints.
Yeah. So this is when the game changes, because it's 1-0. They've killed off this penalty. Nick Blankenberg goes behind the net and just gets, like, assaulted. I feel like I said – I feel like I tweeted that. I texted it to you. And that's what it felt like, because it was I think the Bulldog captain went in high on him. Now, okay, high on him is going to be, like, normal on most other people, because Blankenberg isn't the tallest guy. But he gets hit, and it looks like arm shoulder hits Nick in the head, and his head just snaps back and slams into the boards, and he just goes down. And it was a major and a game misconduct, and I think that was fair. And I was honestly a little bit worried that he might have a concussion and might be out, I mean, probably the weekend.
Well, people that have listened to this show or have interacted with me in the past know that I generally am one who defends a lot of physicality in hockey for the most part.
But I will agree to that.
But this is the kind of thing, and I was tweeting about this, that, like, you have to strike a balance. And this is the sort of thing that, to me, like, Noah Cates should not have been able to play the next game, and I think should be suspended for a while. Like, that is the kind of thing that has no place, no explanation, no rationale, no justification. That is not acceptable and not a part of the sport. Blankenberg did not have the puck. He hadn't had the puck for a while. The elbow is raised. It's a direct hit to the head. Blankenberg wasn't moving. You can't claim that you just accidentally rammed into him. That was an intent to injure, No question about it. And, like, you know, it was the only logical thing to do, was the five in the game misconduct. Like, there's no other way you can assess that. That is one of the worst hits I've seen in college hockey since, remember that incident at Yost a few years back when Eugene Fadiev for Ohio State hit one of the Michigan guys from behind face first into the boards?
Oh, yeah.
That started, like, a big brawl. Like, yeah, not great. So you look at this again and you watch the replay and you're just like, yeah, like, there's no other option as a referee than to dole that out. And it was a turning point to some extent. Duluth loses a leader. And I don't really understand what Noah Cates is doing there. He's a veteran player. I guess he was frustrated at the referees, and sometimes you take that out on a player or whatever. But, yeah.
Frustrated at the referees that you're getting 50-50 calls and that you're retaliating against, like, the smallest guy on the other team? Yeah. That actually really surprised me, because I was like, where did any of this come from? We haven't even played a period. Michigan hasn't scored. They've barely gotten a shot on that. I don't get what's going on here. But he ended up being okay, because I think he came out, what, a few shifts later? I think
he came out to start the second period.
Okay. Well, Michigan gets their power play, and what's the thing we've learned so far against Michigan, or with Michigan and special teams? You don't want to take penalties against this team. And for the first, like, 3 minutes of this major, it looked like that thought was wrong, because Michigan was just moving slow, both on the ice and with the puck. They never really got much set up. Pasta had an okay look. And so now you get the first unit out, the second unit out, first unit out, second unit out. I think it was the third trip out for the, or was this, maybe it was the second trip out for the second unit. And Pasta made a nice little move on the left wing, gets into the slot and dishes to the Brisson dot, as we call it, because that he's on one dot all the time. And Luke Hughes is there and just buries puck, and it's 1-1. And at that point it felt a lot different. I mean, they had, what, I think 45 seconds to a minute left and a chance to maybe even get another one on this all you can eat power play.
Well, I thought with the power play that it started really with the feeling that you had to get at least one on it to tie the game and get into the intermission. And it was the start of a great weekend for Michael Pastrzyk overall with that pass, a really, really nice feed. His game looks a little bit more progressed. And, you know, Luke Hughes, for a guy who the scouting report kind of read, we don't know about the shot. That was a really good shot and yep, perfectly placed. And so you get into the intermission tied 1-1. And at that point, you're sort of like, well, we played terrible and we're tied. So that's probably a good sign.
The other note that I had, and that you actually messaged this to me, but you kind of wanted to take Truscott off of the second power play unit, and you said you see where they're coming from because Blankenberg was hurt, and so you just fill him in with another guy that can shoot, and you play two defensemen there. But you thought, and I agreed with you, that Luke Hughes could probably play like Power or York has as the just the one man top blue line defenseman.
What was weird, they also had him involved in the zone entry on the power play, and
Truscott?
that was not a
Yeah.
good idea. And so there were two instances where they couldn't get into the zone, or got pushed out because he just couldn't handle it. And I don't anticipate that being an issue again, but.
Well, and Michigan is just sort of flush with forwards, right? I mean, they have guys, and even if you use up all of your high-end draft picks on the first unit, I mean, Michigan has guys like Pasta, like Ciccolini that can play fine on the unit too. And you still have Mackey, you still have Duke. So, I mean, there's guys that are good forwards and that can shoot and can score, that they're just other options in playing with, your fourth or fifth defenseman on the second power play unit if Blankenberg is out because he's, hurt or whatever. I guess they tried something. Maybe, like you said, it may not be relevant anymore as long as Blankenberg is there, but
Yeah, that's the expectation.
so 1-1, and right now the tide has kind of changed as they come out in the second period because Michigan has sort of stymied that initial rush. They've been able to adjust to a couple things. They get the power play, Duluth down their captain, and like they get a forever shift to start the period. They had a couple good chances, and
I don't remember
Stashall
exactly.
made a number of really nice saves, I thought, because it could have been starting to head the direction it was ultimately going to go anyway. But
Stayskull, I think is.
Stayskall,
Yeah,
thank you.
that's how my brain is now remembering it.
But he played, I thought, really well and kept him in it for a little bit. Portillo had to make another save at the other end after one of the defensemen was beaten. This is a spot where I don't know who it was because I could not see the number. I just wrote down that a defenseman just got run by. So, but that's more on Portillo, of where this is going to be the theme for the rest of the game for him, is Michigan's going to have the puck for the most part, and he's going to be asked to kind of make one of those stay awake saves. And he did again, just like he did last weekend.
Yeah, I mean that's you ask your goalie to make the occasional big save, and he just kept doing it.
And then the offense arrived, and it started with Hughes in the offensive end. He had a really nice pass to Jack Summers, who was really open and hit the side of the net. They almost had a chance. And then after that, you had that ridiculous play from Thomas Bortolo, who goes cross ice again. And this is the thing that I really like, and it's going to happen again in this series, but Michigan's ability to get the puck from almost near the boards on one side of the rink to the opposite side near the dot on a split second right onto a guy's tape for a shooter gives the goalie no chance. And Bortolo was able to do that to Brisson, who then decided that he was going to have a little bit of fun, put the puck between his legs and flip it up over Stashall, and it's 2-1. And that was probably as high skilled of a goal as we've seen at Michigan, and I mean, I can't even remember real like a comp point for
I mean, I don't really know how much more skill you can get beyond that, right?
that.
Like, that's kind of at the upper end of the distribution.
I mean, Barzal did that last year in going sort of on a semi breakaway as he came down a wing and beat the Sabres goalie, and we had a commenter say that Jágr used to do that a lot. And so basically the people that you're comping this to are high-end elite NHL talents.
Yep.
So it's 2-1, and now you're like, okay, I'm feeling a little bit better about this. Portillo has to make another stay awake save, and we're reaching the middle of the second period, and the 5-on-5 has been a lot better for Michigan. It was not great in the first period, but the second period they've made a lot of adjustments. They got the puck a lot more, created some chances. And then you have the Hughes Truscott pairing that does really well along the blue line, I thought, not only keeping the puck in, but creating space, reversing it to the other from the right side to the left. KJ gets the puck on the near side in terms of like where the camera is. And he does another one of those really nice cross-ice passes to the opposite side, this time closer to the net, and Beniers just has a slam dunk. It's 3-1. Both of Michigan's top lines have had impressive goals. Duluth has given you probably everything that they had so far, and Michigan has taken it, more or less stoned it, and they're up 3-1, and they're just starting to hit their stride.
Yeah, I mean, at this juncture, Duluth is really on their heels, and Michigan is feeling good heading into the second intermission.
Well, it's at this point where we get one of the best quotes of the weekend from the probably, I would say, a little bit biased My Nine commentary guys. And the one guy says, it's been a pretty even period so far. And I looked up and counted, and I believe Duluth had about two shots and Michigan had two goals. So that was your broadcast in a nutshell to a certain extent.
I mean, my reaction was just like, well, what game are you watching?
Yeah, I remember you said that to me. That was that Craig jumped off the couch. He's like, are we watching the same game over here?
Yeah.
I was like, well, I'm not sure what they're watching, but we're watching Michigan put some elite talent on the ice. And then we have an interesting situation where for whatever reason, the Duluth players did not think Nick Blankenberg had been through enough, so they decided to absolutely jack him again after the whistle, this time throwing him into Portillo, creating a bit of a domino effect. And Portillo was down for a little bit after that. It looked like maybe he got hit in the mouth.
Well, his mask got knocked off.
Yeah, well, that would be pretty close. And Blankenberg just was getting abused, that, or at least for the first couple periods.
Yeah, it was definitely sort of like, can like you not do that anymore? Like someone else to be your pinata.
And then entering the third period, it was 3-1. Michigan's in pretty good control. We get another call that goes Duluth's way. This time Moyle gets, I don't know. I thought it was a soft boarding call. I don't know if you had a chance to look at it again. The way that the rest of the night and then the weekend went, it seemed like, well, you touch a guy at the wrong time and the opposite team is in need of a spark. We're kind of just going to assume it's a penalty.
It is what it is. That's what I'll
say. That's true. I said in my breakdown that I wouldn't talk about this, so I guess I'm can be a liar at times. And so Duluth gets their third power play and Van Wy steals a pass up near the blue line after a bit of a mishandle from the defenseman. And he goes all the way and scores on a breakaway shorthanded. I believe that's Michigan's first shorthanded goal of the year. And it's four. Did they get an earlier one?
No, that sounds right.
Yeah. And it's 4-1. And the game is pretty much now over. We're a few minutes into the third and this game has took quite a turn in the previous, I would say, 25-ish minutes of maybe 30-ish minutes of gameplay.
Yeah, at that point, the game fell over. You know, it's a good read by Van Wy, no question, but it was also just a really dreadful turnover. Wyatt Kaiser is a mobile puck moving defenseman that a lot of internet scouts really like. He was drafted by the Blackhawks. He runs their first power play unit, but he was just trying to get way too cute there and tries to do this sort of spinorama pass across the blue line to the other point. And, you know, Van Wy sees it and it's kind of like an old Jay Cutler interception, right? Where he stares down the receiver and the cornerback is right there. Like, that's kind of what it was.
And then pretty much from there on out, like you said, going into that period, you're like, we're going to see if Michigan can close out a good team. And then with that goal, that was, that answered a lot of the question. And then from there on out, the best thing that I had was just not a lot of great notes to take because nothing really happened. Michigan didn't get sort of outside of their comfort zone. They didn't give Duluth a ton of great chances. Portillo still had to make a couple of saves. I think one of them hit his stick knob and went high. Michigan did take a couple more penalties, but nothing really doing for the Bulldogs. And until the very end, when Michigan finally gets their second power play of the night, Beniers gets kind of a jam goal near the post and it's 5-1. And then the refs decide to give Duluth a penalty with like 40 seconds left.
Well, the Beniers goal was like with 50 seconds left.
All right, it's 50 seconds left, and then like right after that,
yeah,
Michigan gets their fifth penalty,
which is just sort of like a, you know.
Well, I mean, it's 4-1. Even the call, like for Michigan getting a power play at that point, is like, okay, thanks, but that's a token call. It's 4-1. Let's just end this game.
I mean, when it's 5-1 and you call a penalty, you know, in that situation, in the last minute, it's got to be something that you have to call to just keep the game from, let's just say, devolving into chaos, right? It has to be something where there's a big hit and now the teams are fired up and there might be fighting, right? Something that is endangering the chance the game ends. This is not the situation, right? Like, you're going to call a ticky-tack penalty with 40 seconds left in a 5-1 game. Like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah.
Come on.
So you wrote your Hockey Bullets piece today, and the thing that I really liked, and you even texted me this on Friday night, but was that you said you didn't think Duluth played particularly poorly. You just thought Michigan was A, better, and B, just out-talented them, which is something that can happen to Duluth. Not that they don't have talent, but they certainly don't get the rush of high-end picks that teams like Michigan or Minnesota or BU generally get. They just play really well-rounded, smartly coached, no-mistakes hockey. And the way to beat that is to just be better than them. And in this case, Michigan had the talent, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, I mean, Duluth could have played better. Obviously, the fourth goal was pretty bad. But outside of that, it didn't really feel like Duluth was hemorrhaging chances or whatever. I thought they played a solid game, but you know, at the end of it, they got blown out. So Michigan's players made plays, and that third period was particularly interesting because Duluth never really made a push after 4-1 down, and Michigan was able to basically just sort of grind the game out, kind of the equivalent of a 15-play drive where you run the ball like every play and the clock's just running out. Michigan was able to do that with long, sustained possessions off the cycle where Duluth just cannot get it out, and there aren't really, you know, high danger chances coming off of those possessions, but the clock is wasting away and Michigan is continuing to hold possession, and Duluth is really struggling just to get the pressure out of their own end.
Yep. And that's exactly what you want to see from a team that has the ability to do it against a high quality opponent, especially on the road, because that's what you're going to need to do against teams like Minnesota, probably Notre Dame, and in once you reach the tournament phase. So that's pretty much the Duluth game. If you stick around, you can find out if they are the Mavericks or the Screaming Eagles.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Actually seen Coach?
No, I have not heard of Coach.
You haven't even heard of it?
No.
But you watch like movies from the 40s.
Yeah, I don't watch TV though, so.
Okay, yeah, that's true. I forgot that you don't watch any TV. Coach was a great show in like the late 80s and 90s, and the guy's like a head football coach of like a lower end division team that he takes up to like becoming really good, and by the time he leaves, they're like a national power. But it's Minnesota State, and they're the Screaming Eagles, and it was perfect. And so then when Mankato became, because they used to be what, Mankato State, I think, is what the school used to be.
I don't remember.
And then, you were probably young. But so then when they became Minnesota State, there was like a little hubbub or whatever about, oh, they should be the Screaming Eagles, and that would be really cool. The funny thing is that the colors are the same. Like, it's literally like that royal purple and yellow. So it almost looks like the same team from the show Coach. So growing up watching that show, I finally got to like use those references, and you were like private messaging me being like, I don't know who you think the Screaming Eagles are, but I think they're the Mavericks, man. It was really funny. And then
I'll just say that you're dating yourself with that reference, and some of the readers were confused as well. So
the one reader, Stephen King, was he's definitely older than I am.
Okay. So, well,
and he lives in Minnesota, which is where the show was based.
Maybe he's just an ignorant dunce. I don't know.
I don't think that's the case. And hopefully he listens to this podcast because he's really into Michigan hockey, and I'm going to go on record.
Yeah, he's an avid fan of the site.
He is, very much so. But yes, so they are in fact the Mavericks, but it was fun to call them the Screaming Eagles for the first time. And like that, this is the first time Michigan's ever played Minnesota State.
Was it?
Yeah, they referenced that on the broadcast. The other interesting thing that I remember about Minnesota State before this game was that, you know, they were always in contention for like a one seed, or sometimes like the high two. And they were always the team that we picked that we wanted Michigan to play, because the other options were like, you know, some absolutely loaded North Dakota or BC team, or Duluth, who, you know, is just never going to lose in the tournament or something. So like, we always ended up going, oh yeah, well, if we could get, you know, Minnesota State's bracket, you know, that'd be all right. And we never have, because they never ended up playing. But Michigan finally did get their shot at Minnesota State, and again, had a rough first period. It's almost like Michigan was just like, were they like not showing up for the first 10, 12 minutes just to keep it close? Because by the end, Michigan was going to overrun both of these top five teams, and maybe they're just sort of like, all right, this is the handicap. You get your head start.
No comment.
No comment. All right. So the first period was mostly nondescript, except for Michigan gave up their first odd man rush of the entire weekend, which, if you watched any of the Lake State series, listened to this hockey cast, or read any of the stuff that we wrote after last weekend, we were expecting there to be odd man rushes aplenty, and that is how Michigan was going to play. It is not how they played. They didn't give up any until this sort of semi two-on-one. The shot went wide, so it was irrelevant. But that was it for odd man rushes on the weekend. And I mean, that was kind of a surprise, I think.
Well, they definitely changed the approach, and we're definitely reining it in, put the dogs back on the leash, and we're not going crazy in terms of sending defensemen deep into the offensive zone or activating them in the rush, et cetera. So that kind of adjustment changes things, and it's pretty clearly a measured choice by the coaching staff. What I will say is that there's nothing else worth talking about from this first period, so we should move on to the second, because absolutely nothing happened in this first period, and that's exactly the way Minnesota State wants to play.
Yep, that's how they do it, and they wait till you make a mistake and they take advantage of it. So yeah, we can jump right into the second period. And once again, Michigan gets a power play early on in the period, and you cannot give Michigan power plays. Nick Blankenberg tees one up from straight away. Luke Hughes had a nice little dish to get it around a defender. It looked sort of like a saucer pass, got it over the stick. Blankenberg fired away, and it's 1-0. And this power play is, you know, when we talk about takeaways, we're at the end of this, at the end of the hockey cast, we're going to definitely come back to it. But like, this power play is, I mean, it's only 12 chances or 14 chances or something like that, but like, it just looks so crisp and so dangerous.
Yeah. And this was a game where, a lot like playing Notre Dame, where you feel like the first goal is pretty important in terms of the way it changes the dynamic of the game and what Minnesota State is then going to do from a schematic standpoint. And so it was good to get the first goal from Michigan, and was set up pretty well. And they get the goal. The one thing I'll note about it is it was a slap shot, which is not sort of Nick Blankenberg's preferred thing.
Yeah.
He tends to use a wrist shot more, but a slap shot there had a lot of oomph on it. So no complaints from me.
No, Michigan definitely has some defensemen that can shoot the puck. The Screaming Eagles, or Mavericks as you like to call them, got the next two power plays, which, surprise, we were talked about that coming in. And these are like iffy penalties too. You know, there's
also
a loose...
one thing we should note about that power play. If I remember correctly, that power play was, or no, that was the next period, wasn't it? The one that the penalty was on Dryden McKay.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
So spoiler. But anyway, these next two calls, that went against Michigan. One was a loose stick from Lambert. It was called for a trip.
Well, that was the one where his stick blade got lodged in the skate.
Yeah, oh, that one was that one was.
That's always just a bad luck thing that happens,
right? And then Edwards got called for. I wrote down skating forward.
Yeah, that was the that was the hockey equivalent of the AJ Henning DPI that he drew against Nebraska, yeah. Where the defensive player is just standing there and the offensive player like runs right into them. And then it's like, oh yeah, the defensive player impeded their path.
Yeah. not really. Both of those power plays didn't really yield a whole lot for Minnesota State, which is becoming a nice theme on the weekend. Michigan finally gets an odd man rush and KJ got a chance, but it's saved by McKay, who was coming into this game as, I think you wrote down that he's like the favorite to be the goalie of the year just in college hockey.
Yeah, that one feels like pretty close to a lock at this point in time. He's tied for the all-time NCAA shutouts record with, do you know the answer?
Oh, yeah, they talked about it, and it's escaping me because you caught me off guard. Good job.
Ryan Miller.
Ryan Miller. Yep. Right. You're right.
Recently retired Ryan Miller.
Did he actually retire?
Yes, back in
after
the spring.
Closing his career out with the Ducks?
Yep.
yeah, so they have good goaltending. Obviously, they have good goaltending with McKay. He makes a big save here. You get kind of a couple of back-and-forth chances. Michigan, it looks like they're on the verge of going up 2-0 because of a really nice like rip play from Kent Johnson, who he just takes the puck away from a defenseman, ends up drifting to one side, tries to pass, and you can comment on it in a minute, gets the puck back and then winds up and takes more of a slap shot from pretty close in, and that allows McKay to reverse from one side of that to the other and makes probably one of the better saves I've seen from a college goalie, as he's laying out and gets his, I believe it was his glove on. It doesn't catch it, but deflects it to the side. Otherwise, it's 2-0 at that point, and then you're starting to think this is going to look like Friday night.
Well, Michigan was really starting to dictate play there for a period of time, and then there was an interlude where Minnesota State starts punching back, and that's kind of where things go off the rails.
Yep. And then so after that save, it gives the Screaming Eagles a little bit of life. Michigan can't really get the puck out after a forever shift for the other team, which is something that Michigan doesn't really have to deal with a whole lot. I think it happened a couple times against Minnesota last year where they couldn't really get the puck out for an extended period of time and Minnesota held possession. But for the most part, that generally does not happen to this Wolverine team. And they're actually playing pretty good team defense for not having the puck. They're rotating well. They're getting their gaps right. You know, it's mostly around the perimeter. And then for whatever reason, and I just sort of watched the replay because you put that in your piece today, where Summers is standing sort of down offset of the goal mouth, and then just keeps drifting north of the dot, and the puck just gets passed through him to an unchecked attacker who just goes high on Portillo, and it's 1-1. And it wasn't really like a bad fundamental play from Summers. He just,
it was a bad fundamental play.
Well, but I mean, like, he didn't like turn it over. He just lost where he was.
Well, sure. But that's part of the job of being a defenseman. So,
well, that's fair.
You know, what was really frustrating about that was that this is a really good possession for Michigan overall in terms of strong team defense, where they are just pushing Minnesota State to the outside. Minnesota State is cycling along the boards, but is getting nothing to any high danger areas. And it's just kind of drifting along the perimeter. And it was basically a fortress around all of the places you want to be. And then it sort of crumbles because one of the corners of the house, you know, falls in more or less, where you have Summers who just, I don't know what he's doing there. He just is basically at the half to almost three-quarter wall, and it leaves a two-on-one down low. And as a result, you know, Portillo, because of that situation, has to approach it differently. If Summers is down there, Portillo is allowed to completely focus on the puck handler, that there's another defenseman covering the player at the far side, and he knows that Summers is going to do enough to obstruct the pass. And so he can hug the post. And if Portillo is in that position hugging the post, you cannot beat him.
You cannot
beat him because of his size. But because he has to pay attention to the other player in a two-on-one, he can't completely focus on the puck handler, which you know, leaves just a little bit up top. But it was a really good shot to find that little bit below the bar.
Yes, it was definitely a good shot, and it came from so in tight that it was fast as well. Like Portillo basically just had to take up the space he could, and if you beat him in the little area, I mean, there's nothing that you can really do. It's just a defensive breakdown, and you know, those will happen, but you know, they can cost you, especially in a game like this where goals were at a premium, and it started to look like this might get away from Michigan after finally overcoming their first period doldrums. They get a goal, and then they look like they're going to get a second and maybe even another second at a different time. And Minnesota State is able to overcome that. They tie the game, and then Lambert gets kind of a soft call, I thought. And again, this was, as you pointed out, after a Summers turnover.
Yeah, Summers is got the puck in his own end, and he passes it up ice, and it hits the linesman, but it was not, in my view, a bad luck hitting the linesman. The linesman was stationary, standing along the boards. That's a turnover, right?
Like, yeah,
there's a clear obstacle in the way, and you threw it right to the obstacle. So,
yeah. It's like hitting the referee with a pass, or the umpire with a pass over the middle. Like, you can see him. He's right in front of you.
Yeah, he's standing right there, and he's not moving. So it was definitely a turnover, and then Lambert gets tangled up with the player. I can't really say whether it was the right call or not, because again, the camera angle was too far out, but you know, it gives Minnesota State another chance. And you know, eventually you keep handing four or five power plays a game, you kind of start to believe at some point your opponent's going to cash in on at least one of them.
Well, and they did on this one, and I don't really think there was any fault to the penalty kill, honestly. I mean, there's a shot from the point that goes into like a group of bodies that's like three or four people. It hits one guy, drops down, goes to the right spot to a stick for a Maverick, and he shoots it and scores because Portillo saw that the puck was going to his right, so he moves to the right to make the save, as you're taught to as a goalie. The puck doesn't get there. It hits a guy. Now you're stuck way out on the right side, and you're not expecting, and it's like a redirect, more or less, because like on a redirect, you're anticipating one angle, you get a second angle. Well, in this case, the puck is just dropped to a stick, and you just get a second shot before there's even one rebound. And you know, that stuff happens. That's what happens when you have an extra player. It's what happens when, you know, you throw the puck into, you know, a wad of people.
And this is what happens on power plays. It gets knocked down in front, and the goalie can't really find it. And then your opponent, who has the extra player, is able to get to it before you can. And that's just kind of the way it goes sometimes. And the point
shot.
That's
why you put guys in front.
Yeah. Well, the point shot, by the way, was taken by Akito Hirose, who is the brother of Taro Hirose.
I was wondering about that. I kept hearing
Michigan,
his name.
Yeah. Long lost Michigan State Spartan from several years back. But.
Well, so he was probably happy to get a point against Michigan, and at that point it's 2-1, and you're just like, man, like we can't get a call, we can't get a bounce, and you know, Michigan just isn't quite making enough plays the way they had previously. You go into the second intermission, and with this Michigan team, you're never feeling out of it because there's so much talent. They can score four goals in a period, and it doesn't really faze you because you just think, yeah, well, you know, look at who's on the ice. And that was what Michigan was going to need to do, or at least get to anyway. And they start the third period. This is what you referenced earlier, where they started on the power play. And we didn't really see a lot of this because they kind of cut away from some of it. There was some jawing and shoving and hockeying and post, extracurricular activities going on, and somehow Michigan gets a power play to start the third after a penalty goes on the opposing goaltender?
Yeah, somebody got tangled up in front of the net, and Dryden McKay got involved and started throwing punches or something. I don't really know.
Throwing punches?
Well, you know, it's what the goalie
does. Throw some blockers?
Right, so yeah, you go like the goalie goes like that, right, and just kind of like jabs them up high, that sort of thing. You see that a decent bit when the goalie doesn't like how close the player is to the crease or whatever it may be. So,
and this was probably...
But the reason I brought that up earlier is because if this was the power play that they score on, I feel like that – this is my position on pitchers, by the way.
That pitchers and goalies?
No, if a pitcher commits a fielding error, the run should be earned. You're the one who did it to yourself.
Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
I've said that for a long time. So my opinion is that if you're the goalie and you take the penalty and they score, it should go twice against your goals against average.
Twice?
Yeah, count as two.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, I can see where it can be added. I don't know if it should be double worth. Maybe like there should be a multiplier factor in there, but sure. All right. We'll go. We can go with that. That can be the official stance of the Michigan Hockey Cast. But Michigan does not score. And this was maybe the worst power play they had all season so far, as they didn't really create anything. They struggled to get the puck in. The only real note that I have of anything is it looked like, and this is sort of what has led me and you to say things about, you know, some of the calls throughout the weekend, is there was a no call on Samo as he's entering the zone, and it definitely looks like he gets tripped, and it's not really, it is kind of obvious, to the point that even the probably pro whatever Minnesota team is playing announcers are saying, oh, interesting, no call there.
You know, you look for consistency with refereeing, and you can't hit Lambert for some of the trip he had gotten previously and some of the other calls that were being made that were very marginal and then not call that.
Especially when the calls are going to the team that is trailing a goal or two, as what happened with Duluth and then what happened with Minnesota State in order to take the lead. And you're just kind of like, okay, we're going to get, but we can't get a call here when we're down a goal. But whatever, it doesn't really matter because Michigan apparently has Thomas Bortolo, who last time I checked is really good at hockey, and he makes a really nice play on the boards in the middle of sort of a cycle to get the puck to the front as he's sort of being pinned. I'm sorry, not the front, to the point where Jacob Truscott is waiting. Bortolo releases and goes to the net. The shot is, it's almost like a give and go where the shot then is wide of the net. I don't know if it was on purpose or not, but Bortolo had positioned himself to the side of the goalie who had come out to face the shot by Truscott, and Bortolo tips it in behind him, and it's 2-0. And that's just a really high skilled play from Bortolo on multiple levels of winning the board battle, which has been a knock against this Michigan team for the last couple of years, is they're not tough enough. They're not rough enough. They can't fight out with these sort of physical teams. And then after he gets rid of the puck to get to the net and get his stick on a shot that's going wide, maybe it was a pass, could have been a pass, and it's deflected in, and all of a sudden it's 2-2, and you think, here we go again.
Yeah, and I mean, that was a really important goal because you enter the third period down 2-1, and you know you only have a limited amount of time until Minnesota State starts pulling out all the stops to, you know, go into their turtle shell. So
right,
you get the equalizer, and now it puts some emphasis back on them to have to play a little more open and try to get a goal in the same way that you need to get a goal because it's tied.
And then sort of one of the weird bounces, and you said nothing happened in the first period, and I let that go at the time because I knew we were going to talk about this, but there was another instance where the puck took a really weird bounce out of the corner when Portillo went to play it, and it sort of like drifted into the crease where there nobody was, and it was scooped up by Michigan. That happened in the first period. In this period, Portillo comes out to play the puck again, and he gets – I couldn't really see it. This is part of where the weird camera angles and the herky-jerkiness of just the movement of the screen gets to you. But the puck goes into the corner, and I can't tell if it hits something or he just never gets to the puck or the defenseman clears it the wrong way or what happened. But there was a few people in the corner, and – the puck all of a sudden goes shooting out through diagonally across the slot to the opposite point where Josh Grohl, our old friend Josh Grohl from last year's team, who played about two games for Michigan, steps onto the ice and just shoots one back at the net. And you're like, whoa, what just happened? How did this happen? And Portillo comes out of nowhere like Superman, flying in with his blocker to deflect it to the opposite corner then. And you're just like, what was this play?
Yeah, it looked kind of on the replay like Portillo was just kind of hot-dogging it to get the puck and wasn't really getting there fast enough. And then it takes this weird bounce and he's not there in time. And, you know, not great. but in the end, it didn't really matter. So,
no, it didn't. But that was definitely an unnerving instance in the third period where it would just suck to give up like the losing goal on like that kind of play. Like it's
it's probably going to happen once this year.
That's so probably true. Hopefully at that point, Michigan will have five goals and it won't really matter, but you're right. The way that Portillo does play, and this is something that we can even talk about, is he does like to go out and play the puck. And I think that's okay. If you can make good decisions and you have good like stick handling ability to be able to pass the puck and hit guys, having a goalie that can use his stick is definitely an asset.
It has its advantages, but there are going to be moments like that, and you're just lucky that it didn't actually go in.
And then comes just, you know, we debated who the top line is, and for me right now, after this play, I just think that the B&B line is the number one line right now. And Bortolo gets – I think it was actually Brisson who started the play, where he flips the puck up – has the puck in his own zone, flips it up to Bortolo, who's in the neutral zone. Bortolo sort of has his back to the opposing goal to receive the pass, has a guy sort of on his back, almost like a post entry, like in basketball, and then pivots and shields the guy away from the puck, skates into the zone. So now they're both skating down the boards, and Bortolo just returns the pass as Brisson, who I think it was him that started the play, just goes streaking down the slot to the other side of, or inside maybe the circle in that range. And Bortolo hits him on the tape and Brisson buries it. It's 3-2. And you're just like, my goodness, what can't this line do, especially offensively?
This play is really an example of why you recruit players like that. you know, the college hockey establishment definitely has a certain belief set regarding their preference for older players and the kinds of guys that Minnesota State trots out there, the 24 and 25-year-olds. And it conveys advantages, no question, in terms of physicality, in terms of experience, et cetera. But there is still a reason why you want 18 and 19-year-olds, you know, out there. And the reason is because they can do stuff like that. And yeah. Minnesota State does not have players who can make those kinds of plays. And those kinds of plays can win a game even if the other team executes perfectly. And I thought Minnesota State handled that situation very well. I thought the, you know, the goalie got over, but it's a perfect pass and a perfect shot. And when Michigan fires at 100%, they will beat everyone because yeah. No one else has those caliber of players. And that's why you do that. It's why you recruit those kinds of guys, because they are the ultimate trump card. So,
and that's sort of what you, or I should say, in addition to like what you said, this is something else that you said in your post today, where you talked about like Brisson taking the leap, and part of it is just all out effort, because this was a play that he dumps the puck up the ice, and there's probably the third forward on the line who should be there to be part of the entry and to, you know, create an option for Bortolo. But Brisson takes on himself, turns on the jets and is there to finish and win the game, because in that sense, as much as we all hate this phrase in sports, but he wanted it more.
You want your playmakers to make plays, and that's kind of what happened. And Brisson a year ago was, you know, he was just a shooter. He was a guy who got teed up on the far side and then just kind of was, you know, unengaged from the rest of the game. wasn't very active in the defensive zone, wasn't someone that was terribly dangerous with the puck on his stick outside of the shot. And now he just looks like far more of a skilled force than he was really at any point last year. By the way, one thing I want to bring up is some people in the comments of my article today were saying I use the Austin Matthews comparison for Brisson's shot at the NCAA level. We should preface that.
Okay.
Austin Matthews at the NCAA level would be scoring like 90 goals. Brisson's shot at the NCAA level is equivalent to Matthews' shot at the NHL level. That's what I'm saying there.
Yes.
But they came in and were trying to use the Brett Hull comparison. The reason I didn't use Brett Hull or Stamkos or Ovechkin is those three guys were right-handed shots. So they shot from the left side of the offensive zone, whereas Brisson's a left shot, so he shoots from the right side. So just clarifying that.
Mr. Detail-oriented over here. Minnesota State decides with about 3 minutes to go, I think actually 2:48 I wrote down, they're going to go with an empty net. It's probably the right move. I mean,
well,
I think
they did. So they didn't. They pulled the goalie with 2:48, but then they put him back in until about the 1 minute mark after they got the power play.
Right. So they get a penalty after that, which I was going to bring up next as yet another instance where you have a 50-50 call with Blankenberg getting called for a penalty behind the net.
It was really iffy.
He kind of checks a guy, and the guy goes like face first into the boards. But like, I guess I have to assume that guy can't skate or stay upright at any point. Like, at some point, you have to be able to move. You just, if a guy knocks you over and you're terrible on your feet, doesn't mean it's a penalty.
Yeah, I did not love that call, and you don't see that call made very much. You don't really see marginal penalties get called in tight games late, right? Like, we all know this about, especially in overtime, that once it gets beyond the 4 or so minute mark left in the game, at that point, it's just sort of like, well, we swallowed the whistle, and it has to be something super, super, super blatant to get called. So it's not very common that you see something like that get called.
Nope. And that's when it was just over 2 minutes to go, and Screaming Eagles go on a power play, and then they put their goalie back in. Did you find that to be odd? I was a little confused by that.
It was very cowardly, that's what I'll say, because the reason you do it, so here's the argument. The argument is that when you get the power play, you're in a 5-on-4, which is the same as a 6-on-5, right, in terms of a one-man advantage. You know, the big difference, though, of course, is that in that situation, if you were to pull the empty net to go 6-on-4, the opponent then has the ability to take shots at the empty net with no worries, right? So generally speaking, if you turn it over below the goal, let's say, and the defenseman there, assuming he's not Filip Hronek, is generally not going to try and shoot from 190 feet away, and, you know, if there is the risk of the icing, because if the guys have been out there for a while, then
sure.
You know, et cetera.
Sure.
So generally speaking, it has to be chipped out, and it takes a lot more effort to get it out and then thus to take a shot at the empty net. Whereas if you pull the goalie while you're on the power play, suddenly if you turn it over, doesn't matter who the defenseman is, it could be Keaton Pearson. They should be shooting at the empty net as soon as they get the puck, right? Because there's no incentive not to do that in that situation. And so if you have an accurate guy there, they can hit the empty net from miles away if they get it right. And so the argument is, okay, you still have the numerical advantage, but you remove that, just fire away from any distance without the fear of an icing thing. It's a very defensively minded head coach way to approach it.
Well, that's very Minnesota State.
Yeah.
So I guess it shouldn't have surprised me or you if we did, but it's what happened. I don't know that it completely makes a difference. Minnesota State actually does pretty well on that power play. They get a number of shots. Michigan, I believe, had like 3 or 4 blocks I counted. They scrambled a ton. There was a lot of diving, high effort from Michigan. They couldn't really get it out, and I think that was highlighted by Kent Johnson getting the puck on the boards, and instead of just trying to sort of backhand flip it up and out, he tried to skate it out, and it got poked away. He was knocked down turning it over, and all of a sudden now Minnesota State had a couple of shots on net from straight away. And I think he's just in that sense kind of lucky that they didn't go in, because at that point, like, Michigan needed a clear and he had one and he just didn't take it.
You can't, like, you just can't do that, especially if you're Kent Johnson, right? Like, okay, if you're Yager or you're Mario Lemieux and you're, you know, massive with, you know, built like a horse and you're impossible to knock off the puck.
Yeah.
Okay. But like Kent Johnson, we know this, is still quite skinny, is not the most dominant guy when it comes to possessing the puck. It's not hard to strip it from him. You cannot be doing that. You cannot be doing that in that situation, especially because there was only about 15 or 12, something like that, seconds left. If he just chips it out, that might just kill the game off, because then they have to get back on sides. It allows Michigan to get fresh bodies out there, and then they have to attempt one more entry. If they get the entry set up, then they've set up with maybe, what, 1 second, 2 seconds left? Like, that was the chance to end the game. And, you know, instead it puts a shot on net and then forces a defensive zone draw with 5 seconds left. But credit to Garrett Van Wy. I thought he was not winning enough late game faceoffs. I thought Michigan had a poor game. Well, they did have a poor game in the faceoff dot. We have the stats to show that. But
yeah,
Van Wy in particular was losing a lot of key defensive zone draws late in the game. But he won the most important one with 5 seconds left, and it allowed Triscott to just slam it against the boards and run the last couple seconds off. So in the end, didn't really matter.
I think one of the bigger takeaways from this game, in addition to like beating the number one team in the country, which is a big takeaway, is that the style was just very different of what than what Michigan wants to play, what they're in a lot of instances used to playing against, and they played a very high end version of it and were able to not only overcome it, but to outskill their opponent and take advantage of the fact that Minnesota State was not trying to score a lot of goals. So if Michigan gets two or three, they're in really good shape. They did it, and they won in a very different way than they did Friday and than they did last week. And that's the type of adaptability that this team is going to need to make a run in March, I think.
And by the way, I put this in my piece, but Portillo was every bit as good as Dryden McKay in that game. And whenever that is true of your goaltender when you're playing Minnesota State, you come out on top. And we're at the point now where it's 11 games into Portillo's career for this season, 7 last year. And he's got sub-2 goals against right around 930, maybe a little above that. I think it was 933 save percentage. But, you know, you look at those numbers and the sample size is getting big enough that we can sort of say, like, I don't really have any worries about this. Like, he was the wild card entering the year because we hadn't seen him play that much in only 4 games, but there doesn't seem any difference from last year. And last year, as we recall, we were basically saying, like, I don't think this guy's any worse than Strauss, man. So looks like we're in good shape.
Yep. And so we can jump right into some of the takeaways we have. I wrote down a few things. One of them is basically what you just said, where Portillo, you know, has a 9.929 save percentage this year and a 2.00 GAA. I mean, I'll take that the rest of the year. I mean, if he does that, I mean, Michigan doesn't lose many games.
Right. And the other thing is, I thought it was a good defensive performance the entire weekend. You know, Portillo made some big time saves at different points, but like, let's be clear here. That's what it winning games against good teams entails.
Yep.
Like the fact is, you are never going to win a championship at any level of hockey. Well, okay, let's say NCAA and NHL. If you do not have a goalie who can at some point pick up the tab.
Yep.
And it's just the facts. Like, you look at, watch the 2008 Red Wings highlights. Like, that team possess a puck like crazy, suppress chance like crazy. And, you know, at the end of the day, Osgood still would have to make 2 or 3 big saves. And, like, that's what I always say in terms of Chris Osgood. It's like, no, he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, in my opinion. But he was in that category of goalie who is good enough to win a championship. And a goalie who is good enough to win a championship is one who can pick up the tab occasionally, make 3 or 5 really good saves per game, because that's what is going to be required when you play really good teams. You are never going to be able to build a defense good enough that's just not going to give up any good looks. Not how it works. So you've got to have a goalie good enough to come up in those situations. And so far, so good for Portillo in that regard.
Very well said, Alex. To the defensive point that you were making, they were light years different than what it was, at least from that start on Saturday, where one odd man rush on the entire weekend. There were a couple that were close, but they didn't really create anything of note, so I didn't really count them, but one actual odd man rush, and then like one really, really bad breakdown, which was just Summers kind of having a brownout for a moment and giving up a goal. There were defensive zone turnovers, yes, and there were some chances that Portillo had to make saves, but that, like you said, that's going to happen in this sport. That's the way hockey works, and you're just going to have bad bounces at times, and the puck's going to jump off your stick. But overall, like, this defense was playing at a level that if they're going to do that, I mean, teams aren't going to score very many goals against Michigan.
Yep.
In addition to stepping up and getting a power play goal from Blankenberg, who's a defenseman, Luke Hughes, who's a defenseman, like, Summers almost had a goal in the first game hitting the side of the net. I mean, the defense is also able to activate and go forward and create shots while not just completely abandoning their posts. And that's, you know, those are the two things that you really kind of wondered about that Michigan has struggled with in the past is, okay, can they bring in a new goalie? Is he going to be all right? Is their defense going to just start spinning in circles again? Well, not really so far. The other thing, special teams. I mean, geez, this power play, okay, it's maybe not the CCM line from 15 to 16 where, you know, they were just pumping in power play goal after power play goal at like a 30-some to 40-some clip for like 2 months. But, I mean, again, like, you're talking about sample size getting bigger. Well, we're up to, you know, 12 chances now, and they have 7 goals. Okay, it's 14, but, like, I don't really like the way that majors are counted as 2 opportunities. I mean, it's 1 power play. Anyway, that's an argument for a different day. But they have 7 goals.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, 50% obviously is
absurd.
Not sustainable, but, you know, if we look at just some other bearings, you could say, in terms of you know, measuring sticks, perhaps, right? The 2016 team that you were talking about converted at 32% for the season. And the best mark ever in the NHL was the 78 Canadians at 31.9. So that's generally the high watermark among high-level teams. Even if you have really good rosters, like the 78 Canadians had an absurd roster that isn't possible anymore, given parity and, you know, the draft, the salary cap, all that sort of stuff. And so, you know, if we make a decent comparison there, I think between 30 and 35% is what's feasible over a full 40-game season. But, like, that seems possible. It seems very much possible with this personnel group, the ability to roll 2 units with players on them, weapons all across. They seem well coached. Like, yeah, I could see them finishing at 33% for the year. Not shocking to me.
And let's go to the other side of that. When you look at the PK, they've given up, I think, 3 goals in 22 chances. And yeah, that's too many chances. I mean, this weekend, I don't really care about, because I looked at half of those power plays for the opposition and thought, okay, I better not say anything. Last week was a little bit different. They did start to hemorrhage a few chances, or I guess opportunities, I should say. But they've only given up 3 goals in 22, which is not too bad. It's about 86%, give or take. And I mean, they do that. And I mean, what else is there for this team?
Well, we talked last year about the old adage about wanting to add together your power play and your penalty kill percentage to have it at least over 100%. Right now, cumulatively, it's at 133%. So,
will you take that, Alex?
Generally speaking, that's pretty good. So,
and then, like, you just look at the offense. We touched on everything else. I mean, this offense is elite. You said that today in your piece where you're talking about just how, like, really, really good it is. And it's not even just the playmaking ability and the high-end skill of Brisson going between the legs or Bortolo getting, like, a crazy pass and then getting back for a tap and having an otherworld zone entry, that type of thing. But, I mean, their possession rate is high. And, again, okay, 4 games, but it's at 58%. And all those games, you know, with the exception of the Minnesota State game, by the end of them, all look kind of the same, where Michigan had the puck, Michigan had chances. They had a period of the game where they didn't play their best, and the opponent was able to capitalize a little bit, at least from getting chances, if not goals. But the rest of the games were Michigan doing what they wanted, especially in that third period of the Duluth game. I mean, Michigan could have had more chances. Like you said yourself, like, you know, Michigan just has possession in the zone. They're not high danger chances, but Michigan isn't trying to score. It's 5-1. They're trying, it's 4-1, I guess, at the time. They're just trying to not give anything up, and they're just trying to control the puck. And that's going to be what happens, I think, a lot of the time. So, like, the last line I wrote down is I'm not really sure how things could have gone a whole lot better in these first 2 weeks.
Nope. I mean, you saw pretty much everything you wanted to see, and you move up to number one. St. Cloud did not sweep Minnesota. Very controversially, by the way, if you followed that story, there was a no call. And then right after that, Minnesota scored the game-winning goal in overtime. So that's got a lot of people in Minnesota riled up right now. But regardless, those two teams split. Michigan beats the number one team, and they're able to move on up to number one. First time at that ranking in 10 years. So,
is it really?
Yep, that's what our good friend Nate Wells tweeted today.
Oh, wow. So
it's been a bit, and now we get to see whether Michigan can defend that title against Western this weekend, which might be, I don't know, like the fourth or third best opponent left on the schedule.
Really?
I mean, Minnesota, UMass, and then like maybe Notre Dame, and then Western. That would be my order.
Well, I didn't even think about it that way. I mean, going,
you could make a case for Tech over Western, but they're right there.
That's
I would
true.
Definitely take both over Wisconsin at this juncture. So
yeah, well, we'll get to see Wisconsin in a week and a half or so. But so Western's what, 2-0? They beat Ferris twice. I guess they punted the other weekend. They only played.
Yeah, they've only played two games
in a home and home. They got a shutout, I think, at home. Won 4-3 in Big Rapids. Ethan Frank has 5 points in two games. Drew Warad, both are seniors, has 4 points in two games. Their goalie, Bussy.
I would say Busey, probably.
Busey, Gary. Is it Gary?
Yeah.
No? Has a 9-3-2 and a 1-5-0. But again, it's in two games, so you know who really knows it. I know Michigan has had trouble at times when they've done home and homes with Western. They will win at home and then go there and just kind of have a stinker. So
yeah, they lost in Kazoo a couple of years back in 2019. They won the Friday game and then lost the Saturday game.
Yeah.
One thing I'll say about Western, they returned a lot of players from last season, so pretty experienced team. Their goalie, though, is the one area where things are a little different, that he only started or played in two games, like played 28 minutes total, so I don't even think he started a single game, but now has started both of their games so far this year. So that it'll be interesting to see how real he is, obviously. But Western is into the top 20. I think they were 17th in today's USCHO poll. And they're normally around there. They're like a team that's always between like 15 and 20, like on the fringe of the bubble, because they're a mid-tier NCHC team. So they get a really good strength of schedule from playing Denver and North Dakota and Duluth.
Right.
But they're never like at the top of that conference. But it's kind of like playing, you know, Mississippi State or something like that in football, right? Like probably a pretty decent team. Like Mississippi State is normally like an 8-5 team. They're never at the top of the SEC West, but they're a pretty good team. And that's kind of the case with Western Michigan. They're never at the top of the NCHC, but they're normally pretty good. So
because
and given,
of competition.
Yeah. And given how weak the Big Ten kind of looks, this is one of the tougher tests you'll see the rest of the season. So definitely not one you can sleep on.
Nope. I expect Michigan to probably win on Friday. The Saturday game has me a little nervous. Have you been out there for games?
No.
So when they were in the CCHA, I used to go, and I probably went 3 times or whatever. And I think Michigan actually won all the games I went out there for, but more recently Western has gotten better, and they're just like you said, like we said before, they struggle going out there on the back end of a home and home. Michigan's definitely gonna have more talent. They're going to be favored if there are hockey lines in all these games, but you know, you're never going to win all of them. And this is, like you said, maybe the fourth best team on the schedule on the road Saturday. Especially if Michigan looks really good Friday, could be one of those sort of trap games.
Yeah, definitely the definition of a trap game. Two things before we sign off here. Number one, shout out to Stephen King, as well as other people that were on the blog who were at the game.
Yes.
Michigan did have some support at the arena. So thanks to those people, especially those who tweeted at us and commented on the site.
Yes.
And what it was like for them to be there. Building off of that, If you have not seen the championship celebration photo, go take a look. It is quite a marvel.
There's a lot in there. Is there not?
There's a lot going on there, especially the sign that says Owen Power eats soup with a fork that you can zoom in on in the background.
And if we could get a bird counter, that I think if somebody wants to go in and just like count how many birds are flying in the background, because also, it looked like a whole flock.
A good litmus test of who really is following Michigan hockey are the people who recognize that those were Minnesota Duluth fans and not Minnesota State fans, like several blue check mark people did. But we'll just leave it at that. Last note, I don't know if you saw the story, but people who follow hockey, this weekend, the Toronto Maple Leafs had to sign a University of Toronto goaltender.
So one of your brothers.
If you remember, Michigan brought U of T to Yost several years ago for an exhibition and beat them 8-1. So this is like an, you know, D3 caliber college player to be their backup goalie on Saturday night because they had no room on the salary cap to call up an NHL player from the AHL. So they
did
had
he get
sign,
in?
No, but oh. just to sit there. So, you know, maybe if he'd like to forfeit eligibility, Jack Levy could be backup for the Detroit Red Wings in the near future.
Yeah, but they have plenty of room in their salary cap, I'm guessing, to be able to sign whoever they want.
He can fly down to Tampa and be the second string goalie one night if necessary. Thank you for listening to Michigan Hockey Cast 4.3 for Alex Drain and David Nasternak. Come back next week for our Halloween themed episode. Can't tell you what will be happening, but lots of special events are planned.